So this tour is going to take us through the Fourth Amendment, Fifth Amendment double jeopardy clause, Sixth Amendment right to counsel, Eighth Amendment excessive fines clause, and prohibition on cruel and unusual punishment, and the 14th Amendment equal protection clause. Clearly, this is going to be a bit of a romp, so hold on tight. I do want to say before jumping into the specific cases that as some of you might have noticed, there's a new justice this term. Justice Kavanaugh joined the court this term, and one thing that's been sort of interesting is to see where he comes out in the court's criminal procedure opinions, and in particular sort of whether he has a tendency to join a kind of ideologically conservative wing of the court that we might sort of identify as being Justices Alito, Gorsuch, and Thomas in terms of the reliability of their kind of ideological conservatism, or whether he sort of swings in more interesting ways in criminal procedure cases. And one thing that ends up being true, and you'll see some of this in some of the 6-3 decisions that fall essentially in favor of the defendant rather than the state, that Justice Kavanaugh has in interesting ways actually not been sort of a reliable member of that more ideologically conservative coalition. And in a number of cases this term, joined actually interestingly with the Chief Justice to create a 6-member majority for in cases that are ultimately decided for defendants or prisoners. So that's been an interesting thing to see, and I'll try to remember to flag that as we go through. So starting at the top, the top of the Bill of Rights, I guess, with the Fourth Amendment. One thing that can be said about the Fourth Amendment this term is that the Supreme Court hasn't given all that much attention to it. After a pretty busy 2017 term in terms of Fourth Amendment decisions, the Supreme Court kind of fell back and actually only heard one search and seizure case in 2018. That case is Mitchell versus Wisconsin. That's Mr. Mitchell. It has not yet been decided, so I'll just sort of give you a sense of what's at stake in the case. The case concerns the constitutionality of warrantless blood draws in the context of, one, an unconscious driver, right? So the police are drawing the blood from someone who is unconscious, and in a state, Wisconsin, that has enacted an implied consent statute, right? So interestingly, Mitchell is the third case on warrantless blood draws that the Supreme Court has heard in the last 6 years. The last two yielded rules that constrained the police, right? So in Missouri versus McNeely, the court held that the natural dissipation of alcohol from the blood doesn't constitute a per se exigent circumstance that would justify a warrantless blood draw. In Birchfield versus North Dakota, the court held that a blood draw is not a reasonable search incident to arrest, and held that North Dakota's particular implied consent statute was unreasonable in imposing criminal penalties on a refusal to submit to blood draws. Despite Mitchell's attempt to sort of wrap himself in the banner, particularly of Birchfield, early indications from the oral argument, which was just last week, suggest that a majority of the court here may be inclined to hand down a much more permissive ruling with respect to consent statutes and warrantless blood draws. So just brief background, Mitchell was found drunk as a skunk on a Sheboygan, Wisconsin beach. His car was parked nearby. He told police that he had parked his car because he didn't think he was sufficiently sober to drive. At the site, they do a breath test, and he blows something like a .24. Of course, that's not admissible. They put him in the car and decide to transport him to the hospital, given the degree of intoxication he's suffering. And by the time they get there, Mitchell is out. He's unconscious. The police request that medical personnel do a blood draw, which they do. It indicates a blood alcohol level of 0.22, and that becomes the basis for charging him with driving under the influence. Now, There was no warrant for that blood draw, right? The state's position is that the implied consent statute enacted by the Wisconsin legislature provides sufficient basis under the Fourth Amendment to take the blood. I'll get to the theory in a minute, but that statute, interestingly, states that drivers are deemed to have consented to both breath tests and blood draws, but also specifically says that a driver's unconsciousness does not revoke their consent under the statute. So Mitchell's position, of course, is that the implied consent statute can't relieve the state of the burden of satisfying ordinary constitutional requirements of actual voluntary consent. And in particular, right, he argues, at least where the individual who's deemed to have consented is unconscious, that is inconsistent with any sort of existing understanding of voluntariness to consent under the court's Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, and therefore, at least for the unconscious individuals, Wisconsin's implied consent statute can't supply the necessary consent under the Fourth Amendment.